Craig. There's Craig.
Craig is here.
Why is the bot named Craig?
I don't know, man. I think someone just named it that, and it may not be relevant to us.
Oh, well. Anyway, unrelated to the podcast, but welcome back, everyone. This is the return of the QS Insider Cast. I'm a new co-host. You can call me Joe. I'm MTG Joe D. And with me here is Crowberry.
What's up, man? Glad to have you on board.
Hey, thanks. It's cool to be here. I've never done a live podcast before, so this is new.
Yeah. Well, we've got a pretty exciting docket today of all the cool things that are happening in Magic right now.
Yeah, there's surprisingly a lot going on, even in a pandemic. Lots of different things you can see. Unfortunately, we're not playing paper Magic, which is a bummer. I miss that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, outside of a webcam Magic, like we like to do, but yeah, not a lot of premier play, if any at all, outside of Arena, at least we hope.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, well, you shouldn't be, because it's banned. Wizards said no. I mean, I'm sure there's somewhere is like underground, unsanctioned, high money tournaments, but it's not for me, not during a pandemic.
It's like a Fight Club sort of situation.
Yeah. Magic anyway, the first rule of Magic Club is you don't talk about it.
You don't
it, man.
Talk about it.
You're
yes.
breaking the rules.
I'm already starting this off on a bad note. All right. Anyways, but yeah, so Joe's new. And do you think you could tell us a little bit about yourself for the listeners who haven't heard you before?
Yeah, sure. My name's Joe. Obviously, I think we got that out of the way. Yeah. I'm the new community manager here at QS. I've been playing Magic since around 2012-ish, like the M13 pre-release. Yeah, I'd been buying cards my whole life, though, just because I thought they were pretty. Didn't get anything super valuable, unfortunately, but I got a lot of random 7th edition commons. I played a lot of like competitive paper Magic. I worked with Crowberry at a big card shop here in our home state for a while.
Yeah.
And now I stream Magic on Twitch and make content on YouTube and write about Magic here at QS.
You're just all Magic all the time, firing on all cylinders.
All cylinders. Always. Yeah, I like Magic a lot.
Yeah, the grind never stops.
Never. You know, I gotta hit that Mythic level in Arena.
Every season.
Oof, I didn't last season, though, because I started a new day job. And that gets working gets in the way of Magic sometimes.
Don't you hate that?
Who would have thunk?
Well, anyways, my name is Chris Crowberry. For those of you who are in the QS Discord here, you've probably talked to me or seen me talk about trader tools. I do a lot of administrative stuff around here. That's kind of my thing in the QS community. If you have a question about using any of our tools, I'm usually the one you'll get contacted by. But today we're talking about Standard, first off, and how we're about to probably see something we haven't seen in a very long time, a week one Standard ban post-set release.
Yeah, it's crazy. For those of you who don't know, they announced that they're looking at the Standard format very closely after all the Arena play that's been going on since the pre-release. The cards are in Arena. You know, we wouldn't be playing with them in paper right now except for pre-release events, but there's mm-hmm. already been like tournaments. So there's tournaments this weekend, but Monday they're taking a look at something, and there's a chance they're going to ban things out of the brand new set. Which, how long has it been, Crowberry, since the last time that happened?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, anybody in chat, but I'm pretty sure it's Memory Jar is the last time that we maybe have seen something of this magnitude. It's not quite the same situation because Magic is bigger than it's ever been. And again, we don't know for sure what they're about to announce in regards to this shakeup in Standard, but it does seem pretty significant, and there are a lot of cards right now with targets on their heads.
I mean, the biggest one, of course, being Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. That's the one everyone's talking about, probably getting banned on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a huge.
I don't disagree.
Right now. Yeah, I don't like playing against Uro. I am an aggro player most of the time, mm-hmm. but it's yeah. What were you saying earlier? It's like close to 40-something% of the metagame right now is running Uro in Standard.
Yeah, if you kind of peek around various sites that are cataloging the metagame and seeing what's being played in Standard right now over the past week since Zendikar Rising's release on Arena and Magic Online. You have something tantamount to over 40% of the metagame as Uro, with some combination of Lotus Cobra or Omnath being kind of in tow. So it's a little concerning for the health of the metagame going forward that is such a significant part of it.
Yeah, all the talk on Twitter right now, whether or not you want to buy into the Twitter complaining or the Twitter hype, the people are freaking out about that four-color Omnath list that's, you know, got the new Omnath, the mythic from Zendikar Rising. It's four of that, four of the Cobra, four Uro, just doing insane things with lands.
Yeah, and the other big card in that list is Genesis Ultimatum from Ikoria.
Yeah.
And just putting landfalls on the stack with the Uro's trigger, Omnath's trigger. It's pretty potent. Kind of have this perfect storm of blue and green cards that are really just being a dominant force, very similar to a lot of the past standards we've seen in the last 3 to 4 years, which again is concerning. So it kind of makes sense that they're about to ban some stuff.
But you remember Oko?
Yeah.
Which unfortunately
this year too.
The Oko season went way too long. And I mean, if you're playing Eternal formats, you still have to deal with them, unfortunately.
Yeah. Not too much on Arena, but Oko is very dominant in Legacy. It was a big force in Modern for a while. But yeah, I feel like we're in the same sort of situation where we just have this blue or green card, or sometimes both, that is kind of really taking over the metagame. And hopefully they make some positive changes to deal with that on Monday, but as it stands now, we're looking at this being the order of the day for the foreseeable future.
Right, because yeah, it's in four color Omnath. It's in the Sultai midrange deck that is the other huge deck right now. Mm-hmm. And even the past couple of days, I've been playing a lot of Arena and streaming it and stuff. I've even been seeing Uro popping up in like Teamer Adventures list.
Ugh.
If you're running green and blue, I think everyone's probably running Uro.
Yeah, so it feels like almost a mistake to not be playing it right now if you have the ability to do so.
So, I mean, I feel like Uro's the obvious target. And people who are in the QScast_QA, if you want to chime in too, feel free. But I don't know, do you think they would hit anything out of the new set? Like, what are the chances that they take down Omnath? Or I doubt they do Lotus Cobra, but it's a possibility, right?
For sure. I mean, like I said, the only precedent that we really have is Memory Jar for something of this scale. But we are looking at Omnath and Lotus Cobra 2.
Yeah, which
those two cards in particular are just, you know, they're heavy on landfall coming, online. Lotus Cobra, along with Fabled Passage, are essentially only fetch land other than Evolving Wilds, which I wouldn't be surprised if people resort to playing one or two copies of. Some of these lists, you do see one or two.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very powerful effect that ramps you forward.
Yeah, Casey in the chat saying that Uro's the problem. And I think I agree based on the games I've been playing lately. And I just don't see them banning Omnath right away. It's like the premier mythic of the set. Paper Magic's not even being played, and it's still like a $30-something card.
Yeah, which is insane. And sort of we can follow Uro's price trajectory from release to now. It's still a $45, $50 card. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Omnath go the same route, even though it is four colors. And honestly, if Uro kind of leaves the metagame, I still think that card will be pretty powerful.
Yeah, I mean, the whole landfall strategy, especially if they keep making cards that are good with it in future sets, which who knows with the new sets they've got. But like, I think landfall is still going to be a good strategy in Standard. Even if they take Uro out, the deck still works.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the biggest value here is Omnath itself, where that's the ultimate goal, and everything kind of just supports that. It does have a couple disparate win conditions outside of that. Obviously, you're attacking with creatures like Lotus Cobra, Bone Crusher Giant. There, some of these decks even play a copy of Kenrith for its 4-5 color ability suite.
Yeah, it can come in handy. I've been blown out by a surprise Kenrith a couple of times. And then that Genesis Ultimatum, it's funny seeing a 4-of Ultimatum being played in something. I wasn't super hot on those when Ikoria came out, but Genesis Ultimatum is powerful in that deck. Like, if the lands deck survives, to be permanents. Right? Yeah. So if the land, if the deck survives the banning, I can see Genesis Ultimatum, you know, maybe getting a little more stock.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the other main deck in the format that's kind of fighting against the Omnath piles, but is also still a contributor to the problem, Sultai Midrange, still plays Urlo. It also plays Ugin, the Spirit Dragon, which is enabled by Uro and kind of comes into play a lot faster because of that. So that's also a card I'm watching.
Oh, that wouldn't... I wouldn't be surprised. Early Ugins are not exactly fun to play against.
Mm-hmm. They are a lot harder to ramp out with Uro being absent.
That's true. That's true. But when you can get Ugin out, like, turn 4, turn 5, clear your opponent's board, and then just rebuild, it's not fun. I may be salty from games this morning, I guess.
Yeah, you're constantly on Arena, so you're just seeing it firsthand all the time. I don't play quite as much as you do, so. What else are you seeing in Standard these days? Like, I don't think there are any real big contenders to take the throne if Uro is not banned.
Yeah, I mean, just grinding on the ladder in Arena like I do, I've been seeing a lot of that Dimir Rogues list is super popular, especially in, like, the Platinum and Diamond levels.
Yeah.
And it's a cool deck. It doesn't have anything, like, super expensive in it either, which I think is kind of cool. Like, if FNMs were happening right now, this would be the deck that, like, you know, the younger kids and the, like, average players were probably putting together because it's fast, it does well. The most expensive card is that Brazen Borrower, which is a cool card. And it's mostly, you know, commons and uncommons, too, which I think is interesting. Except you got, like, the Slither Wisps and the Night Bonders and stuff. But I could see, if Uro gets banned, I could see Dimir Rogues going up a couple steps in the tier list too, so might be smart to keep an eye on.
Yeah, we were just watching that video with the professor in Asian Avenger earlier today, where they were talking about should Uro be banned. The one big thing keeping that Rogues deck in check is Uro sort of escaping things and removing things from their graveyard. So that sort of mill strategy could become dominant. I doubt it'll be the best deck because we still have mono red and adventures decks kind of leading the pack.
Yeah, and... Another thing ahead. That's been brought up on Twitter, sorry to interrupt you, is that, Lucky Charm? Well, I'm calling it the Clover. What is that?
Clover is the name of the card.
Yeah, I was close. I got it in 3. that is another one that I've seen, like, talked about a lot. Everyone's making those Among Us memes, right, with wizards slamming the... call a meeting
and Clover. We're definitely not making those memes. We're not the source.
probably not. Clover is talked about a lot there. Cause I mean, if Uro leaves, do you think Adventures just like takes off even more? I'd hate to play against that all the time forever again.
I mean, I don't grind best of one like you and some of our other friends do. I prefer to play traditional Magic, but whenever I do hop into best of one to do a quest or something like that, I often run into that pile, and it's very good in that format, in that context of where you don't have a lot of good main deck answers typically to how it attacks you unless you're very prepared for it, and it kind of just takes over the game if it goes late.
Right, you almost need to be main decking like Artifact Hate, which is weird because it's the one deck that really, I mean, unless you're trying to blow out like Ember Cleaves, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's another card that a lot of people have been talking about is Ember Cleave. We look at that metagame listing. It's going to be mono red aggro in the front. Should the decks playing Uro sort of leave, and Ember Cleave is sort of the glue that holds that deck together.
That's true. I mean, yeah, as someone who's cast a lot of Embercleaves in the past week and a half again, because I mean, also at any time a new set comes out and there's a new format, you see mono red rise to the top.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, never big enough to really make like big financial waves, I feel like, with the exception of Embercleave still being kind of pricey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one that's super accessible. You know, it's just what you see at FNM at the beginning of the season when FNMs are happening, right?
Yeah. Not now.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to be so hyped when we can play in an FNM again.
But... yeah, absolutely. I feel like everything should, you know, everything go to plan and vaccine comes out. Everybody is clear to sort of be out in public again in some capacity to play at least store level events. I feel like a lot of these prices for some of these smaller cards are being suppressed, which makes it even more interesting that we have cards like Uro and Omnath sort of going trending upward in that sense, because who's buying these? What is it for? Like, you can play this on Arena far safer.
Right.
It only costs the wild card, which is the same as any other rare or mythic.
And I mean, it could just be like speculating, right? Like, I see a lot of people on Twitter who are building their standard decks still,
mm-hmm.
even though they can't play it anywhere. But looking at like, right? Yeah, you shouldn't be. And like looking at the Zendikar Rising prices, it's still wild to me that things like the Pathways are mm-hmm. so cheap, compared to, you know, all these other mythics and stuff people are snapping up. Like Lithiform Engine makes sense. You know, EDH yeah, players Commander. Are playing a lot of webcam Commander. Yeah. It's weird, man. It's a weird world.
Oh, and I guess the one we missed is Scoot Swarm.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of a surprise to get snapped up and be at the top of the metagame for a minute. Although we're not seeing it quite as much in these lists coming out.
Well, because it was shutting down Arena, right? Like, people were making mm-hmm. so many tokens, it was just crashing the... the program.
Yeah, that is true.
That's a disadvantage of the new digital age that we're finding ourselves in, is like you can shortcut tokens when you're sitting at a table with someone. But
yeah, I definitely saw a tweet the other day that was paraphrasing. It was basically like, so this is a mobile ready game, huh? And it had a it had like 40 Scoot Swarm triggers on the stack. It's just something absurd like that. It looked pretty funny.
Yeah, I didn't. My phone wouldn't handle that. I can barely run YouTube right now.
Right.
Although mobile Arena would be sweet if they can make that work. I will play it.
Everybody's absolutely looking forward to playing Arena on the toilet. I'm just gonna say it now. Everyone wants to do that.
100%. That was my motivation for wanting it on mobile.
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at with Standard. And we kind of brushed over it, but what cards are you looking at from Zendikar Rising? You said something I think was pretty significant, the Pathways.
Oh, definitely. I mean, most of them are $5 or less. Like the Crag Crown, Timber Crown is mm-hmm. around the $5 mark, because that's the red-green one, which is, you know, being highlighted in those Landfall decks right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I'm definitely trying to pick up all the Pathways. That's the, for those of you who might not be aware, they're rare double-sided lands that don't come in tapped. And so like Crag Crown is red green.
Mm-hmm.
It's just super cool concept for a land. I think, you know, it's no dual land, but like I want a couple of these for any deck in any format I play in those colors, I feel like.
And by dual land, you mean it doesn't have Forest Mountain printed in the type line.
Right, it's not fetchable, which is
it's functionally those things, but yes, it's not fetchable, so they're a little less playable in Eternal formats than you'd like, which is probably what's keeping their price down so much too. That's probably a huge factor in it.
Yeah, that's true. But I still think, and I think we're starting to see it a little bit, like lists I've been seeing, you're going to run a couple, and you're going to want them in Commander.
Mm-hmm.
They're just good. I think they are probably going to be worth more than that $4 or $5 range once paper Magic starts getting played again.
Yeah, and pretty significant too is like that sort of thing is, it kind of looms over everything we think about in Magic as a whole, how much cards cost, what people are wanting to play, day in, day out, week to week. So, like, I think we're identifying here, like, a pretty good opportunity should Magic be coming back to the store level in the next few months here. You know, we hear a lot of talk about vaccines and things coming at the end of October. And while you may have a different opinion on that, and that'll vary, I think what we're identifying here is that there's an opportunity to snap up these sort of staple cards for the future. Like, these pathways are just a great example of something everyone's going to need for every deck that's more than one color, right?
Right. I mean, especially if you're playing standard. Like, if we get back to the tables while standard is still a thing that's happening, yeah, I think all of the lands are going to go up. All of these, like, dual sides. You know, you've got the mythics like Emirius Call and Shatter Skull Smashing is another one to be looking at.
Yeah, the Bolt, that's the Bolt land, right?
Yeah, it's one of the Bolt lands, which are cool, too. Like, I think just the novelty of them could even drive it, because, like, the decisions that it poses now when you're playing Magic on, like, when to play it as a land or when to hold on to the spell, I think adds an interesting dimension to the game.
Are you leading the horse to water? Do you want me to talk about it, Joe?
Yeah, go ahead. What? I don't actually know what you're talking about.
Anytime I get a chance, I just want to talk about the WoW TCG and how I think it was a great mechanic that you could row any card in your hand as a resource. In that game, everything was a generic resource for every mana cost, and it works very similar to Magic. But in that sense, there was a skill testing element, which I think was, you know, the best part about the game. You get to choose whenever you want to cast your spell or play it face down as a resource. And I really like the opportunity to go ahead and get to do that again with these Zendikar Rising Bolt lands, the ones that enter tapped, and so forth. I think it's such a cool mechanic. I don't know if I want to compare it directly to cycling in terms of how good it is, but it feels really good to play with in Limited.
Yeah, it's super cool in Limited. The decision trees are really cool. Mm-hmm. I've been losing to myself a lot because of them, because, you know, I'm just not quite that good of a player, I guess. But it is cool to look back and be like, oh no, if I'd played that as a land right there instead of the one damage burn spell, I would have won that game. And, you know, Rosewater said in that article that came out a while back that they're going to keep doing this too, mm-hmm. in different ways for the new sets that are upcoming. So it's not like a one set gimmick. I think this is going to, you know, we're going to look back and this is going to be one of the mechanics that's changing Magic right now for a good long time.
Yeah. I mean, the last time we had something as significant as this, in my opinion, is Companions. And we kind of saw how those turned out. So I'm hoping that this doesn't end up in the same situation. But as far as what we're seeing now, I think it's just a big plus to the game overall. And a lot of the more potent front-facing cards, especially the Bolt lands, I think the ones that have good effects are going to be highly in demand for Standard coming up, should they prove to be important, which I think they are.
Yeah, easy. Also, I realized I lied about the pathways a little bit. One outlier is the Clearwater, which is the blue-black Clearwater pathway, Murkwater pathway. That's closer to $10. But all the rest are five and under.
Yeah, it's probably due to the Soul Tie list and probably playing four of them.
I would imagine.
They play a playset, definitely. Yeah. And kind of going back to our other standard cards, not specifically Zendikar Rising, but I think it is very interesting where we're in a space where we do have those semi-fetchable lands, the Triomes from Ikoria. Those, at least, you know, in the time being, they're fairly affordable and at a low price range. And you can get those non-foil showcase versions for pretty cheap on some of them. I think Zagoth Triome is kind of getting away from us here, is seeing some like a tiny bit of upward movement. But I feel like those are lands to watch as well. Just having semi-fetchable tri-colored lands is not nothing.
Yeah, I mean, because they're cool cards, too. Again, that's another, like, one where I'm just stoked on the gameplay concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they're super affordable for the alternate arts. That's something I've been talking about, if you read my articles, a lot lately, is the non-foil premium cards that they've been putting a lot of effort into putting out. Like, any playable non-foil premium card right now that's super cheap I think is a great pickup. Because if you have foils that curl, and we all know that foils curl pretty easily right now, you'll get a game loss and be depressed about it for a long time. Not that I'm salty.
Yeah, not that you're salty at all. Goblin Guide.
Oh, Casey's got an interesting point in the chat here. All the standard card prices drop more as the set and premium packs release. That is something to consider, I think, because there's like a flood of different premium rares into the supply. I don't know. I'm still of the opinion that like the real playable ones are going to be worth holding on to or trading into at the very least, because people, when we go back to being able to play competitive Modern and competitive Legacy, they're going to want those, you know? Because people want bling for their decks.
Absolutely. And like you're saying, just having that element of, you know, not having to worry about getting a failed deck check because your foil is too curly, but still having a bit of leeway in styling your deck to how you want, because a lot of times that was just left to basic land choice. And now this gives us a lot more option into what we want our decks to look like, which is important to a lot of players.
Yeah, it's one of, like, besides like sleeves and your mat or whatever, it's one of the like best ways to showcase your own personality or whatever.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of rolls into our next topic here. We were plotting before the cast of like, and yet again, it looms over everything, you know, pandemic time, events are kind of canceled. We're just in this spot with Paper Magic where a lot of things are just so much cheaper than they would be normally under, you know, your traditional circumstances. And I think it's worth just taking a look at a lot of different cards that are going to pop in that space. Like what we were just talking about, anything that has an alternate art that's not foil, that's pretty significant going forward, especially just seeing Double Masters come out. A lot of the talk right now that I'm hearing around the inset non-foil showcase cards or the full art ones, I forget what they call them for that specifically, but those are a lot more rare than their foil counterparts in some cards, which I find really interesting. And that may be anecdotal, but...
Well, yeah, no, because when I first went down to our LGS to pick up my like VIP packs or whatever, one of the employees there had a full art Goblin Guide foil for me, and we were going to trade for it because, you know, for those of you who don't know, I really like goblins. I collect all the goblins. It's my thing. And he was like, hey, I saved this for you. I knew you'd want it. We looked up the prices, and the foil is significantly cheaper than the non-foil was at the time. And I've been watching them, and they've stayed like that. Mm-hmm. You know, people are saying it's distribution issues and things like that, but it's just a strange world to live in where if I wanted non-foil Goblin Guides, they're double the foil.
And I mean, even in that sense, like a lot of those cards too are very desirable in foil. Like I think Goblin Guide's a good example. Jace the Mind Sculptor is one I've been sort of tracking because I would be. Foils are, you know, they're very low. I mean, we kind of saw the redheaded stepchild of that foil series as the From the Vault version, and that's always been pretty close to the regular non-foil printings. But we're seeing this Double Masters foil version be very cheap in comparison to something like the Mythic Edition from Ravnica Allegiance. That version of the Jace is far more expensive than this original Worldwake-esque full art. It does use the original art, but it, you know, looks slightly different.
And it looks cool, too. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with all of the full art printings. You know, I was talking about the Meddling Mage full art with you the other day, because you shared that, you know, Modern Humans is still being played, you know, Modern's being played on Magic Online, and Humans is starting to really take off again as a deck, and that runs 4 Meddling Mages, and the non-foil full arts were only like $7 last time I checked, and it's cool art. It's a good card. The card stock seems to be like they're kind of sorting out those issues too, from based on pure anecdotal evidence from the packs I've been opening, at least. But
yeah, I mean, very rarely I see it, you know, and I don't open high volume sealed product these days like I was doing a few years ago. But everything I've opened from these most recent sets, everything feels like the print quality is at least okay. You know, there's no severely bad cut lines. We haven't had any, like, you know, common cases of severe inking issues outside of Jumpstart, I believe.
Oh, yeah, those Jumpstart ones were nuts.
A few snafus on that one. But everything is, like, pretty positive as far as print quality of the cards, as far as I can tell. And, again, I'd love to hear anyone else's experience on that if you have something different to say. But for the most part, I've been pretty happy with how that's going on.
Yeah, like, I haven't opened a ton either. I've opened more than you, I think, because I've been doing those unboxings for my channel or whatever.
Yeah.
But they do feel good. And, like, the Zendikar Rising draft set booster thing, I'm so confused with all the different kinds of boosters now.
But yeah, we have
the
three
draft
now.
Booster pack, I just filmed an unboxing for that. And those were all the, like, Japanese print process.
Yes.
So those felt great per the norm, but...
Yeah, everything is pretty peachy keen on that sense. So I'm pretty happy about that. One thing to be pretty happy about in Magic, at least.
Right. Yeah. You know, you got to take it where you can get it, man.
Yeah, especially these days. Speaking of stuff like that, I will do this awkward segue into our next topic. The big thing that we wanted to talk about on this one, in terms of how people shake out data for decks and things like that. We wanted to talk about how formats being solved too early make it hard to spec on Standard in particular, but also things like Pioneer.
That's still a format, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still a format that's dominated by a few decks, and everything else is kind of not great, but it's still very young. So there's time to see where it goes. Do you think that we're in a space where data is sort of the enemy and Wizards was right to sort of curtail what everyone can see as far as a weekly MTGO list and stuff like that?
I don't know. I'm a little torn on that. I was writing about it in my newest article, The Changing Landscape of Magic the Gathering, but like, because tournaments are being done constantly.
Yeah.
Now, because we have access to Arena, there's sites like MTG Melee, where people can run their own tournaments with their own prizing and stuff. And Wizards is running them all. And even like with Zendikar Rising, it was clear within the first hour of the streamer event, right? The early access event, that Omnath Landfall was the best deck. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't give you a ton of time if you're trying to be like a standard speculator, right?
Mm-hmm. The mail's only so fast, especially right now.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that's a whole nother can of worms there.
Yeah.
So it's weird because, like, as a player, I love the fact that I have access to all this data constantly. Like, as someone who likes to play competitively, you know, at a mid-tier level, I'm no pro, but like, I like to be able to read this constant stream of deck lists and deck breakdowns from the players I like to watch. But as someone, you know, who likes to do a little speculating, I don't know, it worries me a little. I guess.
It certainly makes it tougher to make calls to where it is advantageous to pick cards up and flip them in a buy list sense or, any sort of arbitrage opportunity. There are, of course, lots of opportunities in different formats. But I think the thing we're looking at is like everyone's going to identify what the best strategy is very quickly because of just the velocity and volume of data that we have right now. Like you were saying, that early access streamer event, people are going to figure out what the best deck is by word of mouth on Twitter in, you know, sometimes minutes, but you were saying in just a few hours, which is probably par for the course if everything's going to be like that. It's just sort of one of the detriments to having everything be so visible in a digital age.
Yeah, and so you got to think, like, when we go back to playing paper Magic, which, you know, God willing is soon,
yeah,
Arena's not going anywhere. You know, people aren't going to stop playing Arena. Wizards isn't going to stop pouring tons of money into this, you know, gold mine of a digital program they've come up with. Mm-hmm. So we will be going into paper tournaments while still having all of that information. So, I mean, if you're looking to pick up cards for Eternal formats, I think it's actually kind of a a cool thing. If you follow all of these streamers who are doing the early events, and you're on Twitter and you're on Twitch and you're following all of this, you can be plugged in to where all of the players that are going to be playing Paper Magic again soon are going to be getting their deck advice from.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because that's where all these, you know, new kids who are picking up Magic right now, they're watching all of the popular streamers like Merchant and Bloody and whoever to find deck lists. So when they want to go play Paper Magic finally, those are the people they're going to be looking at for lists and stuff. You know, it's there's a lot more content out there.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess in a non-competitive sense too, you know, we can sort of flip this topic the other way around, that there are opportunities to find sort of fun casual cards that people may be interested in that's outside of the norm because of people like that who are streaming. People playing pet decks or something considered off meta, there might be a card or two in there that they think, wow, that's really awesome. And then suddenly, you know, what we'd like to call the Saffron Olive effect, where
right.
you have a card like Bring Delight in that Niv-Mizzet deck, or Pillar of the Perrins was the land from an old Ravnica set for that modern deck of five color Niv-Mizzet. That thing spiked very recently. And it was a case of, wow, that's such a sleeper hit to sort of pop up that no one really identified until someone's like, look at this funny deck. And then it sort of takes off. So I think there's still room for stuff like that to happen.
I think so, definitely. Like, yeah, when we were working at the shop in the mornings, you would know if, like, Saffron Olive had put out a new video, because all of the buy lists we were pulling were weird. And you'd be like, oh, someone must have made a video. But now there's going to be more Saffron Olives, right? There's more popular streamers because of the pandemic, which honestly I think is pretty cool and healthy for, you know, the longevity of the game, hopefully, and at least in some aspects.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of health and longevity of the game, next topic is the reserve list and all the buyouts that have been happening lately. You may have gleaned what my opinion is on the reserve list from that statement, but we were kind of identifying a lot of buyouts that were happening over the past few weeks. If you read our buddy Sigmund's articles, he's sort of just charting out everything that happens week to week and looking at quote-unquote strange pricing trends. I'll learn how to talk someday. Where you have cards like Tropical Island, for instance, which is a dual land. But Tropical Island, in its revised and unlimited printings, they have a pretty similar price trajectory, and they're hitting at the same price points. So that's kind of strange. You know, dual lands are really interesting right now anyways, because everybody's playing Commander on webcam if they can, and they're sort of the premier dual lands to have in that format. I know I have a few that I'm holding on to right now that I'm pretty happy with the growth, but, you know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird to watch for me, because, like, as a player, I started playing, you know, long after those were, like, initially a thing, mm-hmm. I guess. So I'm glad, I can tell you, I'm glad I picked them up when I was working at a shop and had, like, a trade credit bonus. Because now I have them for my deck, right? Like, and it's just weird to me, too, because there was such a disparity between the, like, revised and unlimited for such a long time. And the fact that on some of these, they're, like, weird and close. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you my favorite reserve list card is Goblin Flotilla.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. It's my pet card. It's a 40-cent goblin that's on the reserve list. So I like to make that joke a lot. Like, check it out. I've got hundreds of reserve list cards.
For those of you who haven't read Goblin Flotilla, I linked the Scryfall there in our
QS. It's so bad. It's a bad card.
It's a terrible card. But it's cool that you have a bunch of them.
Yeah. I just picked up a bunch from ABU, and I got a message from someone who works there, like, what are you doing? I'm living the meme life. You know, keeping your life interesting. You have to go pull every copy of Goblin Flotilla you have.
I don't know. Those are funny cards too, because we're seeing cards like that pop out of nowhere. where whether they see some sort of fringe EDH or old school play or not. It really just sort of depends on who's picking what that day, it feels like. There are certainly like trails of evidence for some cards, but you know, you just have a lot of weird stuff popping up. Sigmund identified North Star from Legends, which is it's a god awful card as well. I think we sussed it out that it takes 8 mana to do anything meaningful with it, to cheat a spell in for any sort of casting cost as though it were colorless. And we'll be linking that in the chat here. But it is such a bad card that is seeing extreme growth right now, and I find that interesting.
I don't know how much longer that can last. Like, you know, reserveless cards that are playable and are good, mm-hmm. like, that makes sense to me. You know, no matter how you feel about the reserved list. I was just going over Sig's article again and looking at the Time Twister price.
Isn't it just sticker shock to the max?
That's absurd. I'll tell you, I'll never play with the Time Twister, it looks like.
Maybe someday. Maybe someday something will happen where we can make those accessible, but we can't all be like Casey down there who has a Time Twister.
Oh, thanks, Casey. He'll let us borrow one. I don't even know what I'd play it in. I don't play blue.
Yeah, you don't.
Often.
Maybe I'll borrow it. But yeah, that's kind of the strange spot we're in. Everything with the reserve list, we see these kind of sort of cyclical buyouts where every year or so things pop and then they sort of retrace and then different things pop on it. It's just in a weird spot and we just keep seeing it over and over again. It almost feels like beating a dead horse, which is a strange way to describe anything.
That's a weird metaphor. Don't beat your horse.
Yeah, I don't know why that got popular. But anyway, it's just strange that we see this every year or so, sort of around this time. And it's sort of like everything outside of the, you know, the typical playable cards and legacy EDH. It's like throwing darts at a board.
Yeah.
To sort of predict what's going to pop.
And I mean, with the pandemic too, like people buy-listed all of their stuff they're not playing with anymore. And there's so much uncertainty. People are losing their jobs. You know, the economy is in a weird spot. So I think it makes sense to me that people are trading up into reserved list, right? Because it's still seen as stable investment. I mean, we've got all these people crying for the end of it. You know, which I think some of them have valid points. There's a lot of valid points on both sides, in my
absolutely
opinion. But I think it makes, and people are grasping at straws too, which I think might be where some of these random ones like North Star are coming from. Like, I could still get this. It's on the reserved list. You know, like a serious version of my picking up the stupid goblins.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume there are a lot less legend cards than something from Fallen Empires, where Goblin Flotilla is from. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty bad set overall. And Legends has that nostalgia factor to it as well, where it's part of Magic's, you know, first expansion sets, Arabian Nights, Antiquities, Legends, and the Dark. People kind of consider the old school. So, I mean, it's got that going for it, but outside of that, it's a very inefficient card with a strange effect. So I can't see this one going anywhere, but, you know, not quite a bulk box, but, you know, just an old school collector's binder who's trying to fill out a set, or just sitting in a warehouse because they happen to buy into this trend on the buy list on accident, I would call.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, if you were able to take advantage of it, more power to you if you're moving your North Stars.
Yeah. I mean, there's that old adage of, you know, the card is only worth what you can buy list for it at times, because I'm sure these are pretty difficult to move on a place like TCG Player. Reliably now, outside of the spike. I mean, people are probably, if any one of these big vendors corrected their buy lists, quote, corrected to include the higher price of this card, you know, they're taking a bath on it a little bit and probably as little as 3 months' time. But that's just my assessment of it. I could be wrong, but we've seen this time and time again over the past 4 or 5 years, or even longer for some folks. So,
because everyone gets FOMO, right? Like fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. You see that every time a card spikes, like we were talking about with the Saffron Olive spikes that we were calling them. Like everyone who wanted to play the deck gets them, and then the price starts going up, and then everyone's like, oh crap, I got to get these while I still can. And it's a weird cycle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like I said, being a dead horse, there's every time we talk about the reserve list, it's sort of the same conversation over and over again. There's very few interesting things to say about it because it's just you're retreading the same ground. Oh, look, this weird card popped. Dual lands are still expensive. Power is still expensive. You know, we have I mean, when I look at that class of card of, you know, things that quote unquote should be expensive. I always like to look at Underground Sea as sort of the price index for where things are at right now. It's probably the best card to watch because it is the most prominently played dual land in Legacy most of the time. We've seen Tropical Island and Volcanic Island kind of swap spots with it every now and again, but I still find it to be the most expensive dual land, and I believe it is. We do a quick search here. But Revised Underground Sea, I kind of like to watch that, and that's sort of the indicator for where the reserve list class of playable cards is at. Of course, we have outliers like Gaia's Cradle being, you know, infinitely expensive, it feels like, due to like EDH and having green being the most powerful color at most times.
Man, I sold mine right before the spike, too.
Sour just grapes.
Yeah, you know, I needed some cash for other things. Kicking myself now, but you still I still got more than I paid for it.
Yeah, so I mean that's a win sum total. If you put in a little and you got a lot, doesn't hurt that much. Oh, what could have been?
Right, like oh man, I guess I'm not playing green in EDH anytime soon.
Yeah, or you're not playing it quote unquote optimally.
Right.
Although most play groups kind of don't care if you proxy cards. They don't care if you're running I think is their direct replacement. Growing Rites of Itlamok does a very cool impression of Gaia's Cradle.
That's true. Yeah, it's a fun card to have. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm always playing red. Like at least I still have a Wheel of Fortune.
You're always playing whatever lets you play the most goblins. That's what I heard.
I mean, you know, I got a brand, dude.
Yeah, that is true. You are the Green Goblin avatar in our Discord here. So. But yeah, I think that kind of does it for us this evening. It was cool to kind of come back and talk to everybody. And we had a few more than usual to sort of listen to the cast and hear us yammer on about nothing. but it's cool hanging out with you guys, answering questions.
Anyone have any questions for us? Like, as we end up here, any Q&A for Crowberry or I?
Kind of just, you know, meander about at the end of the show here. It's always cool interacting with you guys. I know we've sort of had a quiet state in the Discord here, but we're hoping to change that. Having Joe join the team was really important for that, I think, and I'm excited to have him on board.
I'm super stoked to be here. I've always been a fan of Quiet Speculation and the team in general, and getting to write articles every now and then was super fun. So I'm super glad to be here with everyone. If you ever have any like ideas or suggestions for stuff, feel free to hit me up. You can PM me on Discord anytime. If I'm asleep, I won't get back to you, but, you know, I will when I wake up, right?
It doesn't look like we have any questions coming in, so we'll kind of wrap up a little early here. But I want to thank you guys for joining us, and we'll be back next Thursday after the release of Zendikar Rising, kind of going over the stuff we talked about this week and seeing if any of our predictions are right, what's spiking, what's going down.
We'll have a band to talk about.
We'll have a ban to talk about. Yes, that is going to be pretty significant.
Maybe multiple bannings, even. They could get wild with it, man. So
yeah, I mean, the precedent is Memory Jar, and that's all I can really think of that is anything like this. And having an announcement for an announcement, especially, is just very interesting because they sort of hinted that they wouldn't be doing that ever again, and lo and behold, a few months later, here we have that very pre-announcement. So we'll see how this shakes out on Monday.
Oh, yeah, you'll see me tweeting about it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that does it for us. I've been Crowberry.
I'm MTG Joe D. Take care of yourselves out there, man.
Yep. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, whatever you got to do. Peace.